Good morning. Thank you for bearing with me. It's amazing, you know. You can have the most tightly titrated schedule in the world with all this structure and life still happens. So anyway, good morning. As it's been said before, it's really still kind of astonishing to look out and just see this kind of, it feels like an ocean of faces, familiar and unfamiliar. When we first arrived on Friday evening, there were probably half the number of people that are here today. There was maybe 50, which was still quite a lot of people for us. But the space felt cavernous, truly cavernous. And today, filled as it is, it feels much smaller. So which is it, large or small? From my own personal experience, it's still kind of huge. Actually, even with half the numbers, that's a large group for me to be in. For many others of you, you know, who perhaps come from larger practice centers, maybe this actually doesn't feel so large at all. Maybe this is the size of the average retreat. Our conference that you would normally attend. So again, which is it? Is it large or is it small? Is either one of these true? If neither is true, is either one not true? So on one hand, we could say that it is this congregation of us here together. All depends. It all depends on our own point of view and, in a way, its relationship to what it's not. There is only large because there is a sensation of small. And only small exists because there is large. One actually doesn't exist, really, without the other. And also, there is only the idea of small or large, because there is no small, a large, or large, which is really just a form or a name constructed out of simply what is. When we are just completely in our experience of sitting, of walking, of sewing, of moving together into the hallway, of moving together into the dining room, there actually is no idea. It is idealless. There's just simply sitting, walking, chanting, one body, we are it. There is no body. Sometimes we believe, like I might at this moment believe, that looking out at this group, that this group is actually existing outside of myself sitting here on this cushion. But actually, does this group really exist outside of myself? From this perspective, I'm actually forgetting that I am actually this group. And I can't actually step outside of it. I can move where my seat is. But can I actually ever really step outside of this group, except in my own mind? I wonder how far I would have to move my seat to move outside of this group. Is there a place far enough away, you know? If I moved it outside the door, would I be any less part of this group? If we were a bird or a drone flying overhead, how would we be perceived then? Perhaps then we would completely just disappear into this one moving, shifting shape. Small or large. That would probably depend on the bird's own personal karma, previous experience, conditioning as to whether it was small or large. Perhaps to the bird, we might just simply be a good place to defecate with a nice vibrational hum 3 times a day. Or say, for instance, if you just happen to be making a pot, you might have a foot, a body, a neck, and a lip. And the constellation of these elements together gives the pot its particular stance, its character, its energy, if you will. If you change any one element, say the foot, for example, the whole rest of the pot completely changes. It can go from squat to elegant with a 16th of an inch difference. That's all it takes, and it's a different pot. Change the lip, and the body changes, etc., and so on. If we were actually to just remove the foot from underneath the pot, foot being what the pot stands on, would it still be a foot? If I took the foot and put it on top of the pot, does it become a neck? What would it be then? So each element is what it is and functions really only in relation to everything else. A foot is only a foot in relation to where it is with the pot. So no aspect exists independently. And I think part of what the Diamond Sutra is telling us is that we, our lives, are actually no different than this. So to kind of reiterate what my predecessors have so eloquently and profoundly said, each in different ways. So much of this text has to do with seeing really how so much of our experience has to do with our ideas of our experience. Starting with this idea of ourselves, again, that there is even this fixed entity that we call ourselves separate from the rest of the group in this instant, but separate from reality, that looks out on the world, much as we may, again, look out on this group, not seeing, not realizing that actually we ourselves are this group. And our ideas of the world and our ideas of our ideas are also like this. The problem, if there is indeed a problem, which could be viewed as yet another idea, is not really that we have these ideas, but that we actually take them and believe them to be true, to be real, and to be fixed. So this all sounds very theoretical, you know, this idea of a self. I mean, I have to admit, I never ever spent much time thinking about the idea of a self. I mean, in some ways, that for the longest time just meant nothing to me, like the idea of a self, like so what, you know? But actually, it has everything to do with us. This idea of a self has to do with those ideas that I, which is this self, am a failure or a success, or I am fearful, or I am fearless, I am anxious, I am confident, I am healthy, I am sick, I am all alone, or I am completely crowded, etc., and so on and so on and so forth. And in this way, we have infinite ideas about this self that we think we don't actually really think about. And as our ideas of ourselves are embedded in us so deeply that we're not even realizing they are ideas, so too are our ideas of others. There's nothing more stifling sometimes than being with somebody who thinks they know you and they have an idea of who you are. You know, you immediately just feel like, that can be one of the hardest things sometimes about going back home to family in a way, because there's so much history and there's so much past there that they're not seeing who we are right now, because they already know who you are from what you were before, you know. But we forget that ship sailed and keep sailing moment after moment after moment with ourselves, with others, and with the world. So these ideas we have, problem or not a problem, can cause us vast amounts of suffering. Again, most often, really, because we're just simply not realizing that all they are is ideas for a particular moment in time. That they are not necessarily reality. We heard from Roshi and Joshin earlier on how our ideas of who we believe ourselves to be have all to do with our conditioning and past karma, really just all the endless causes and conditions beyond which we can even really conceive, extending back to those people who shaped those, who shaped those, who shaped those, you know, going all the way back and all the way out in space, not just back in time, but, you know, as Shinryu was alluding to yesterday with the economic condition, you know, it just extends in all directions the causes and the conditions affecting this moment. This mind in this moment, that result in our lives now. So the Diamond Sutra is telling us again and again and again that the practice of the Bodhisattva is to be free of these ideas, starting first and foremost with the idea of the self, notably our own selves, not some abstract self, but this self. And in speaking of those bodhisattvas who came to understand the teaching of the Diamond Sutra, Subhuti actually says, Buddhas and lords are free of all ideas. He doesn't say devoid of them. He doesn't say blank of them. He doesn't say completely without them. It's interesting the use of the word free of them. So by that, it's like we can intuit just this quality of not being bound or stuck. And as we've heard from each of the previous speakers, limited by them. Because actually we can simply see them for what they are, which is perspectives at any given moment in time of who we are, what the world is, what reality is. And to a certain extent, a complete extent, we can never get outside of our own, we are an idea. We can never get outside of our own lens and perception of reality. There is no, to a certain extent, this is how we can never grasp the totality of reality, because we will always be, to whatever extent, experiencing from our personal particular point of view. The problem is when we don't realize that's what it is. And we mistake it for truth. Is it large or is it small? It all depends. So, this might seem like just a kind of intellectual exercise, but actually, really, it's not. You know, it's like, how can this help us? Especially, we may be feeling like we're a failure, like we'll never find a relationship, we'll never get out of our depression, we'll never get out of our fear. What could this possibly really have to do with what's actually going on? Bringing it back to the personal realm, I too had an experience this fall of kind of feeling really profoundly like a failure, actually. Concerned that I would never make it, be successful, you know. My idea of being successful as a ceramic artist. I doubted the value of my experience now and was thinking that choices I had made had been kind of mistakes on my path, that I had passed by opportunities, perhaps taking them for granted that I shouldn't have. And so I'm kind of doomed to this eternal obscurity and lack of success, which would then lead to losing teaching jobs and et cetera and so on. And this train of thought begins to go down a dark hole that doesn't really seem to have a bottom. And I was really working with, okay, I'm just going to allow these feelings. I'm just going to, you know, allow these feelings. And I did a lot of sitting and practicing, just looking, being with these feelings. And actually, you know, I was having the sensation that actually they were just getting stronger and more intense. You know, it was like, you know, really getting in touch with, oh, I made all these mistakes, oh, I'm doomed, oh, I am so depressed, oh, this is how I am feeling now, oh, you know, everything was just like, I will, you know, and I will never get out of this, you know, it was just, like this repeating tape, you know, like Groundhog Day. And once I kind of could begin to notice that actually this was a repeating tape, that actually I wasn't actually feeling anything new or different. That actually I was just going back to the same story, if you will. I kind of had this sense of something else besides, in this instance, you could say, you know, practicing samadhi in a way was needed to shift the perspective. just being with them and just allowing them, from the perspective I was locked in without realizing it, wasn't really enough. And there's, what is it, a theory, or I guess it's another idea that you could say, like, our practice has three legs or pillars. There's a term that's not coming to me, but like samadhi, the precepts, which would be action, our activity, our action, our functioning in the world, and wisdom in the Diamond Sutra, the wisdom of emptiness, the wisdom teachings of not knowing. And I somehow, from my years of experience, something was telling me, you know, because I don't often do this study practice as much as the other practices. And so it was like, let me pull from this wisdom perspective. And so I went to the precepts, actually, because we hadn't yet really begun working with the Diamond Sutra. And just, there was something about just reading that line of there is no fixed self, not knowing the first pure precept, not knowing there is no fixed self. Somehow, it was like something cracked open, and it allowed me to actually begin to see that all of these feelings, sensations, certainties were actually ideas I was having about myself. It allowed me to see how many ideas of myself I was actually fixating on. How I had been in the past, how I am now, and how I would always be. I could actually, from this wisdom perspective, see that actually these were simply constructs. Frames, in a sense, that I was imposing from outside of myself to somehow measure and define myself. Once I could sort of begin to see that that was happening, that when I then went back and began to just sit with these feelings from a shifted perspective, the frames and the constructs could begin to dissolve, because I could see that actually they were frames and constructs. So, shifting this perspective reminded me that in fact there is no solid me to know and define. There is no solid me that could be a failure, that was a failure, that would always be or not be anything. And once I kind of could see that and actually just appreciate, come back to actually just being in my life and appreciating my life without these definitions and categories of what I thought or constructed it should be or how it might be better. All of a sudden, everything became very multidimensional, open. I've actually never felt stronger about my actual work and what I'm doing than ever. And it was kind of like, what was I doing? And it allowed for who knows how this will all unfold. There was room for everything. So it's not as if we see something and then certain thoughts and feelings never arise again. But they no longer have the power and the hold of, like, you know, stuffing some really large thing into a pillowcase. You know, we're just... this diamond awareness does, in fact, shed light, reflect upon, open up, and cut the ties that bind us the most deeply, if we can remember to use it. And I think it was Roshi who said, it's kind of like magic when we actually just do this practice. It's kind of mysterious that actually the supreme perfection of wisdom should lie in not knowing. Subhuti said, Lord, as I understand the meaning of what the Lord has preached, there is no dharma whatsoever that the Tathagata has fully awakened to, nor any dharma whatsoever that the Tathagata has taught as supreme and perfect awakening. Why is that? The dharma which the Tathagata has taught is ungraspable. It is ineffable. It is neither a dharma nor a non-dharma. Why is that? Because noble persons are distinguished by the power they derive from the unconditioned. How could we possibly know what hasn't even happened? We are all here to reach deep into that unconditioned wisdom which is innate to each of us. Just underneath all the ideas, all the stories we tell and believe to be true about ourselves, about the world, about others. But really, it does very profoundly begin with ourselves. It's right here. As Shinryu said yesterday, don't be afraid of the dark. It is okay to not know. It is more than okay. It is, in fact, essential. And in a way, it's just realizing what is actually going on all the time. You know, I mean, we just think we know, but actually, what do we know? Not much. So we are right in the middle of this session, which I've been kind of really impressed with how deep it is. I can really feel just the whole energy really settling into this one body, you know, the sounds, the bells. I mean, everything is really just responding and moving together. We're moving together in a very, very, very different way. During Kintin, you know, I just was noticing all the cushions. You know, the first 2 days, you'd walk around the cushion, the Kintin line, and there were just stuff everywhere. You know, just nothing was contained. And this morning, it was just like, you know, our attention and our absorption is getting more and more intimate. In everything we're doing. So I would really want to encourage you all, we're right at the midway point, to really let yourself keep going into what you don't know. This is a time when actually we really consciously give ourselves permission to not have to figure anything out. We don't have to fix anything. It's part of why we come away on retreat, to give ourselves this permission to just simply be. Which takes a lot of courage, because a lot of things will come up that we, in fact, probably do not want to see. So it's important, especially at this time, midway in, to really use the courage and the fortitude that brought you here to begin with. And it's a very, very brave thing to do, and especially for the new people venturing into a new great group, a new place. Really tap into that courage that brought you here. And just let yourself relax into what is. Let it be a relief that you don't need to figure anything out or fix anything. And just simply see what arises, whatever it is. And if it feels like it's just the same old thing again and again and again and again that's coming up, it's likely just a story that you've been telling yourself, clouding what's actually there underneath. See if you can actually read this story with fresh eyes. Perhaps shift your perspective. See what's underneath. Where is this feeling coming from? How is it being generated? From where? This is actually the 2-year anniversary of the passing of a very, very dear friend of mine who passed away 2 weeks after Christmas. And right before he died, Bruce said to me, "What a strange journey it's been. Nothing is like what I thought it would be, but it's okay." So I really, really do encourage you to use this teaching, samadhi, being one with the precepts, how we're acting, and wisdom, the understanding that actually we don't know, and we are not solid, and nothing is solid and fixed. And to let yourself shift between all three, perhaps changing how we enter this moment and how we enter this mind. So I'd just like to leave you with this question that may or may not be helpful. But what would it be like, all these feelings, all these ideas, all these thoughts you're having, if they actually had no solid root? Just see what that might feel like. Even if you have to pretend or imagine, what might that look like? No solid root.